Hello, I'm author and journalist Rosie Greene, and welcome to my podcast, Life's Rosie. If you're listening to this, you're most likely a member of the Broken Hearts Club. When my marriage imploded after 15 years, I coped the only way I knew how, by writing about it for magazines and newspapers. And that meant I was lucky enough to interview the experts, to spend time researching recovery, and to receive messages of support from thousands of women. Now, I know I was lucky, so I want to pass it forward to chat to relationship experts about how to move on, to rebuild self-esteem, and to find true happiness and contentment. This is about surviving and thriving. It's about going from snot to hot, from rock bottom to reinvention. Together, we've got this. Andrea, I'm so happy that I'm really honoured that you're here to talk to me. I was just saying that I'm such a fangirl, and I love the way you talk about things so emotionally and honestly and empathetically. And I honestly, you know, I was watching some of your stuff and there was people saying that you saved their life. And I genuinely think that will be true. It will be true because people are so alone with their thoughts. And then for someone like you, beautiful, smart, successful, to say, look, I've struggled with these things too, I think is so important and empowering.
Oh, well, that's a nice way to start a day. Thank you so much. That's really nice of you. That's really kind of you. And do you know what is so lovely about when people do say things like that is that all I've ever done is be myself. Yeah. And, you know, my whole kind of, I know people hate the word journey, but my whole journey with even doing what I'm doing now literally started by answering people's DMs. You know, I do my own socials. I don't have a team, you know. Yeah. I'm not Beyonce. It was literally...
You're Beyonce to me. but it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think, you know, around sort of certainly around heartbreak and around mental health and around, you know, so self-esteem and all those issues, it's easier, isn't it, to present this facade. It's easier on the ego to say, oh, yes, I'm fine and I've done this and it was a mutual decision, or I'm absolutely, you know, so... You know, I think it takes massive honesty for you to do what you could do. You could do all those interviews, couldn't you? And just say, yes, it's everything's perfectly fine and I'm happy and I'm, you know, but you've been really honest about the stuff you've been through.
Well, I mean, two things. One, I for many, many years, I did do that. And yeah, I did do that because I think that's how we're programmed. I think especially as girls growing up,
yes,
and then you become, you know, become young women, we are programmed to say, how are you? I am absolutely fine. How are you? Yeah. And you know, that's tick. That's the good girl response. And also at work, you know, you are programmed to always show your best self and to do your best and try your hardest and all this sort of thing. And I realized after many, many years, because I'm 52 now, and I think that's actually it's great because it means that I'm able to look back and go, oh, wow, yeah, I totally got that wrong. Yeah, I was trying my best. I didn't know any better, but I totally got that wrong. And I tried to be a Stepford wife. And yeah, I tried to be a Stepford wife in every part of my life. So I tried to be it at work. I tried to be it at home because I thought it was the right thing to do. And I thought showing any kind of cracks, either the whole thing would fall apart, but also people wouldn't like it. And I think you're so, maybe it's my personality as well, but I was so ingrained with don't do anything that people don't like. Always be smiling. And when it, you know, I've been married 3 times, which I was very ashamed about, really, for a long time. And I wasn't ashamed about being married 3 times. I was kind of embarrassed, put my hand up and go, I'm actually getting married again. But I was ashamed about the first two because it felt like failings. And then once I'd processed everything, and there was a lot of processing to do, I realized actually they weren't failings at all. They didn't work.
Yeah.
That's it. Exactly. It didn't work. But actually to go forward into life with a full heart and no bitterness and have learned something from both of those things. And clearly I worked on Loose Women. So we would sit in our meetings, they're like, go on, Shirley, you're a little bit bitter. No, I'm upset and I'm hurt and I'm angry and all of those sort of normal human emotions, but I'm genuinely not bitter.
And you're so right. That's the most positive thing, isn't it? To come out of those relationship things, I've been taught something, I've moved on. That's success rather than pushing it all down, pretending that you're fine, having the Stepford wife, politician's wife face on. I just wanted to ask you though, because
you know, like we are taught to smile and be good and not put any pressure or emotion on people. But I presume that when you, you know, when you do talk about your marriage or you've been open about, you know, you've been open about how your marriages have gone wrong sometimes, you will get judgy people, presumably, and you will get that backlash. So how do you, because, I, you know, when I wrote about my marriage splitting up, people were like, how do you do that? Are you not worried about the children? Are you not worried that you're going to look like a sort of rejected woman for the rest of your life? And there is an element of that. So how did you process that? How did you deal with that?
Well, again, sort of breaking that down. So in terms of, you know, being, you know, totally honest about things, I have been very honest about things, but I haven't told the absolute full story about things because not everything is everybody else's business. You know enough. And because I do have children, and also these people who I've known in my life are now having their own lives. Mm. And just because I had problems within my relationship with them, and they were fairly dark, some of the problems, that's our story, and that's it. Yeah. So I've been honest about how I felt about everything and all that sort of stuff. But no one needs to know the kind of nitty gritty.
Yes.
And but I didn't do that necessarily to stop people hating on me. I did it because I have children and they need to go off and lead their own lives and this sort of thing. I also didn't necessarily hold things back out of respect for my ex-partners. Mm. But I, as in, you know, there's a lot of stuff I could have said, but clearly, you know, that was I going to do. So I just thought, you know what, let's everyone just carry on with their own lives. And I also think that's how you stop being bitter. I've drawn a line, that's done now. So then that's that bit of the question. And then the other bit, in terms of the haters, I always refer it back to, I love Kelly Clarkson. Do you like Kelly Clarkson?
I like Kelly Clarkson.
You're in my gang. Because if you don't like Kelly Clarkson, there's something wrong with you. Because she just seems like the nicest lady.
And she does. And I love her approach to like empowerment and everything. She's
all of
brilliant.
It. Well, yeah. Well, I listen to Kelly Clarkson, What Doesn't Kill You Makes You Stronger, on repeat for about a year.
And that really makes a difference. Those things that feel like they're woo-woo actually massively make a difference, don't they?
Hugely. And so much so, Amy said the other day, came on the radio, she went, oh, Mum, there's your song. I thought, it was only five. She can still remember this is a song I used to. But years ago, Kelly Clarkson was being interviewed and somebody said to her that a journalist somewhere had written something really horrible about her. And this other journalist said, which I thought was really not very nice, oh, did you see that this person said this thing about you? What do you think about that? I mean, that's not very nice, is it?
No.
And Kelly Clarkson said, oh, no, I hadn't heard that, but that's okay. She doesn't know me. And if she knew me, she'd think I was awesome. And I thought, right there is the attitude that you need to have towards anyone who is being disingenuous towards you. They don't know you. And, you know, and also I say to the kids as well, do you like everybody? And they're like, no. So how can you expect everyone to like you? Not everyone is going to like you. And that's okay, because you don't like everyone. Where I draw the line is I might not like certain people, but I just don't interact with them.
I must ask you about your heartbreak soon, but I do feel like it's quite interesting. There are various things, and I know you've written a lot about sort of keeping women in their place, keeping them small. And I do think the children thing, you know, talking about saying, well, you can't talk about that because of the children, it is another way of keeping women small and not talking, isn't it, as well? Like, because that's the ultimate card people play. But actually, you know, there is so much loneliness in small children. There is so much loneliness in heartbreak. There is so much and if we can't talk about it, we can't move forward.
And also there's a misunderstanding that just because you don't talk about things publicly doesn't mean you haven't spoken about it with your children.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Conversations with my children. Absolutely. Mm. Of course I have, because they're my unit. They're my family. But in the same way that I wouldn't stand on the top deck of a bus with people that I don't know, or get on the tube and go, hey everyone, I know you've no idea who I am and you don't really care. I just want to let you know that this thing happened to me and party, party bar. All right, bye. Why would I tell everyone? As long as my little family unit are all good and everyone's across everything and, you know, we all communicate, I really don't care about anybody else. And that's how we should all be living, really.
Yeah, but it takes a while to get to that point. And I'm sure for you, you know, with the messages you absorbed and being, you know, happy, and especially in the media, I think that you're presented, you know, you're sort of told not to create any problems for anyone, aren't you? You know, make it super easy. Anyway, right, I must ask you. So can you talk to me a bit about your experience with heartbreak? I know when we've sort of met before, you said, I know about heartbreak. And it is, like, for the women out there who are listening, who are in the throes of it, who message me every day saying they don't know. And I remember this, how you're going to get through the next day, you're counting through the hours. You know, I think a lot of women think, okay, you know, this is me, I'm at home feeling like this, it can't possibly happen to beautiful, successful, clever, creative, famous people like you, but it does, right?
Because we're all just human. All I did was do a job that people could see. That's literally the only difference, you know, and I had really good hair and makeup, clearly.
I have to say, you are very beautiful. You're very beautiful. So, you know, that's just polishing it. But yes. So did you feel, have you had times when you have thought, I can't get out of bed, or I can't move forward, or I can't?
So when I got divorced for the first time, and it used to be such shame in having to say, no, that was my first divorce. No, actually, that was the second one. But I don't feel that now. You know, I was really lucky that I've had people in my life who loved me enough to ask me to marry them. What a joy, what a beautiful thing. And I tried wholeheartedly to make it work. Am I going to say no to something just because somebody leaning over the garden fence having a good old gossip is going to have an opinion on it? No. So when I got divorced the first time, so I met my first husband when we were at school, and I literally looked at him across the sixth form common room. He turned around. It was the 80s. He looked like a mixture between Mel Gibson and Tom Cruise in my head. And no idea whether he really did, but anyway, in my head. And I literally, it was like some kind of really terrible teenage rom-com. I fell in love with him at that moment. Oh. And I loved him for 17 years. Yeah. So I married my first boyfriend.
And that's a massive success, isn't it? I mean, 17 years is a massive success, and it's about reframing it. It might have, you know, gone wrong, but ultimately, you know...
Yeah, exactly. And that's how I see it. And what I look back now, actually, with a kind of almost not fondness, but almost, oh gosh, you know, like a motherly thing, is we should never have got married. We should never have stayed together that long. We were not meant to be. It's blindingly obvious now when I look back on it now. Clearly we were meant to, because we had a beautiful son together, and that's how I get my head around it and think we were put together for a purpose, so this human being could be created, and hopefully he's going to go out and do amazing things in this world, and that was the point of our union. But looking back, the warning signs were there from the first sixth form party. You know, his behavior didn't change all the way through. I just kept hoping it would. Because
did you mold yourself to fit that? Did you think, if I'm good enough, if I'm smart enough, if I'm pretty enough, if I'm all of these, this will make him behave in this way?
All of those things. But also, if I dim my light enough, if I stay quiet enough, if I don't irritate him, if I make sure that I only do things that he likes so that then he'll like me. All of that was just naivety when it comes to how relationships work. I didn't know any better. And actually, nor did he. And that's why I don't have the bitterness, because I think we were two kids, really, who were finding their feet in the world of relationships, and both of us getting it totally wrong without knowing it in our own sort of ways. And the reason why I think there was so much friction was because I just kept thinking, I was modeling myself on my parents' model of marriage, which is they met at 15 and 16, fell in love, and they are still happily married today. And I just thought, you just need to keep working at it. And what I didn't take into account is that works if, as a couple, that's meant to happen, or you're right for each other. And again, with hindsight, I understand that being right for each other can mean a whole lot of things. But if you're clearly wrong for each other, no matter how much work is going to happen. So when that marriage ended, my world was destroyed. Now, to the outside world, it looked like I was the one that ended it, because... I people think I left him for someone else. I didn't leave him for someone else. We had got to such a terrible moment in our relationship where someone showed me kindness and I reached out.
Yeah.
And I let myself feel better. And that, the haters out there are going to go, oh my God, you're so weak, you're so whatever. But there was a part of me that needed, I needed comfort and I needed to feel okay. And there we are.
Yep.
When it ended, I thought, it felt like my world had cracked open. I had a small child who was around 2 at the time. So Finley was about 2. And I moved around the corner. I literally moved a street away because I wanted to do the right thing in terms of parenting. I wanted to make sure that he carried on having this great relationship with his dad and seeing him as often as possible. So I wanted to make everything as easy as possible. So I moved a street away. And what it meant was we could both, one could walk him to school in the morning and one could pick him up, you know, is it preschool or nursery or whatever. In the day, I could only leave the house to go to work or to take Finley to the park or maybe go to the supermarket. I couldn't go anywhere else. The thought of leaving the house made me want to throw up.
Because you felt so exposed, or you felt so... Because I'm similar to you. My relationship started very early. So to have this idea of that person not being, and like that only stability that you've ever kind of really known, it's a bit cliche, but you feel like you feel that the safety blanket's gone, don't you? The sort of, you know, the rug, anything's gone from under you.
It was all I'd ever known.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were teenagers when we got together. My parents, I grew up overseas. I grew up traveling abroad because of my dad's job. My parents had moved back overseas again, so they weren't here. I leaned on his parents a lot because obviously I'd known them since I was a teenager. And we only had friends that we were in couples with. So all of a sudden, every single safety blanket had gone. And understandably, they walked away from me because I was a bad person. And actually, no one really was interested in the whys and wherefores of anything. And I didn't want to be the kind of person who stood on a street corner shouting and pointing fingers going, well, actually, there's a whole lot of stuff that you guys need to know.
Exactly.
And so I didn't do any of that. And I swallowed
it. It's a very lonely place to be, isn't it? I've got a really good friend who sounds, you know, very similar. And actually, I have messages from women saying, I want to be in your club, you know, what I write about, but I feel like I can't be because I chose to leave, or I had an affair that meant that I did leave. And I always just say, actually, you know, now we realise that people leave for a reason, they exit for a reason, you know, actually it's about self-awareness and rebuilding it. So I'm sorry to interrupt, you were saying, so yeah, but it's very hard. It puts you in an even lonelier position because, you know, everyone was sort of scooping me up and doing this, but that wouldn't have happened for you.
No, that's right. And also I took it all because I thought, no matter how much you hate me, you don't hate me as much as I hate me. I hate myself. I am the worst person. And I'm actually a really nice person. I'm shocked to think you can't be as nice as you seem. You must be so fake because you seem so friendly and approachable and smiley. Actually, you're a bitch. I'm not a bitch. Actually, I'm a really lovely human being who was in not a great situation, did not have any of the tools to know how to get out of it, and took comfort when it was accepted.
And so how did you build yourself back up from that point?
Actually didn't happen until I got divorced for a second time.
Yeah. That's interesting.
That didn't happen until then. And
you're making me quite teary, I have to say. Okay. But so that's interesting. So it didn't, I mean, people call it the work, don't they? It's a bit like the journey, but you didn't start to heal until that point.
No, because I felt so worthless and I understood why people didn't, you know, weren't thinking fondly of me because I didn't feel fondly of myself. And so I ended up, I I picked back up the relationship with who then went on to be my second husband. Mm. And in a nutshell, I got pregnant. Mm. And I got pregnant with my beautiful daughter, Amy. And I wanted to make things right.
Yeah.
So I got married. And it felt like the right thing to do to make things right. I'm going to make this work. I'm going to try as hard as I can and I'm going to make this work.
Because you've got that good girl, which you've written about, that good girl mentality. It's like, okay, I'm going to, you know, this is going to be shiny and perfect. And I'm, you know, you put everything into it and lose yourself in the process.
Which I did. And I'd never really gotten over what had happened the first time round.
No.
So after Amy, I got postnatal depression. And I didn't tell anyone for quite a while because that I was feeling so low anyway. I just thought it was part of that. And then also thrown into the mix, I got offered the job on Loose Women. So I had a young baby at home. I moved out of the area. And it was the area that I had friends that I'd known since having my first child. So they were like my mum's group. And they were super, they'd pulled back a lot because they're like, oh my God, it's really awkward now. So again, I didn't have that scooping up. Everyone backed off. And so I thought, I'm just going to go. Mm. Sounds horrible. It's like leaving a party. It was like, I'm just going to go now. So I moved and I moved out of London and I knew nobody. I had no mum's group. I now had a young child and a baby and no group. And then I got offered Loose Women literally when I was on maternity leave. And I only said yes to it because my agent was like, you need to say yes. This is a really good job. And I was quite scared because I thought that's quite a feisty show. I don't know if I can do that. I said yes to it. And it was the best decision I ever made because that became my network. That became my group, but not in the way that I could have possibly imagined. Because normally we surround ourselves with people who feel exactly the same way that we do. And we surround ourselves by people who repeat back what we feel. And then we feel super safe and we feel really validated. And yeah, you're amazing. And he's a this or whatever.
Yes, you're so right. I hadn't thought about that.
And all we do is surround ourselves and we sit there and we drink our wine and go, yeah, them. And actually, I was surrounded by women who called me out at every corner and went, yeah. Well, actually, no, you shouldn't have done that. Or why are you thinking that? And I was like, that's not how friends are supposed to behave. What's going on?
Yeah.
It was so powerful because what that meant was for the next 13 years I ended up working there, every idea you had was challenged. And I realized what a powerful position to be in if you're surrounded by women who within a you're not falling out, you're just disagreeing.
Which women are very bad at doing, right? We're very bad at saying, actually, I don't agree with that, but not having the conflict around it.
Exactly.
Whereas men will go, oh, mate, that's a bit harsh, or actually don't do it. You know, whereas we're all sort of super nicey to each other, aren't we?
Yeah, and that's what helps you grow. So for me, when, you know, I didn't tell anyone I had postnatal depression, I mentioned it to Amy's dad and I mentioned how bad I was feeling and the response wasn't good. So I quietly took myself off and went to the doctors and didn't tell anyone. And I went on antidepressants and I think he just thought I pulled myself together, but actually I wasn't. I was on antidepressants. And after we were together for 8 years in the end, you know, I really do give things a go. And I really did try. And then it became very apparent that I can't make this work. So, and that ended, that's a whole different story for a glass of wine not being recorded, but that was a very difficult situation, how that ended. Yeah. So for me, that was when Kelly Clarkson came in. That was when I actually started. I was properly on my own for the first time since I was 17. Because, you know, before then, I was on my own for a bit, but I was in such a kind of headspace. I was not interested in anything. Now, actually, I'd now had two children by two different fathers. Again, any friends that I'd made at the school gates, they pulled back again.
Okay.
So again, no safety net, because I'm now that lady off the telly who's got divorced twice. Better stay clear of her, because, you know.
And also people will have that, they'll probably think that you might not want them to approach them, or, you know, because it's a whole different layer, isn't it? I think when you've got a profile, it must be... Yeah, I think I can't imagine how isolating that is.
It really was. But this time around, I thought, I get it. I totally get it why you don't want to talk to me at the school gates, because you don't know what to do. And it's fine. So, you know, it was tough. It was really tough. But what I did was I thought, right, actually, for the first time, I'm free. Mm. I'm free. I can make my own choices, my own decisions. I didn't plan to be here. This is not how I thought my life would work out. I thought my life would be like my mum and dad, where you meet someone, you fall in love, you get married, and yeah, there's bumps in the road and everything else, but you love the bones of each other and you figure a way out and it's all great. I mean, my mum and dad, they were around the other day. They live around the corner because they moved back after traveling and everything. You know, and they're still giggling, and they're still they love each other, and they like each other. You know, that's the key to a successful relationship. And I just thought, you know what, maybe this just isn't for me. So I did what any self-respecting woman who has just got divorced would do, and I enrolled in agricultural college.
I love that. I thought you were going to say I got a dog. That's what I did.
No, I did already have a dog.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I love that. You decided to become a farmer.
I decided. I was like, right, okay, what makes me happy? What do I enjoy? How can I fill my time when the kids aren't with me? You know, because when you're divorced and they're with their dad part of the time, I need to fill my time and do something useful. I don't really have many friends, so I can't just call on anyone. I love DIY. So I was doing the house up. I bought myself like tools. I was putting up shelves. I was that was all great.
But even that presumably was, I don't know, like for me, because I was in a relationship from very early, our roles have become very sort of sexual. Like, I don't think that's the right word, but you know, blue job, pink job. And so for me, I felt very scared to do like, to put a picture up or to do that, because I felt like this isn't my job. I don't know what I'm doing. So did you not feel any of that, or had your work kind of meant you felt okay with that?
I was really lucky that my dad, although he has very traditional views of women, and I realized that part of my slightly skewed attitudes in terms of being a good girl and being quiet and making myself small, came from my parents' parenting of me. My dad, he sent very mixed messages, I suppose, because he made me believe I could do anything I wanted to do. There was always a slight caveat, which was, as long as you're home in time to make tea. But
we can't be perfect.
Yeah. But he did genuinely make me feel that I could do anything. And when I left home for the first time to go to college, he bought me a toolkit and he showed me how to put up pictures. He showed me how to use a spirit level. He showed me how to put pressure in my car and change the oil, or not change the oil, but test the oil, all that sort of stuff. So he was really, he was actually quite modern in terms of, you know, that sort of thing. So when I was on my own, I mean, this is so funny. I used to, in the evening, especially like on a Saturday night, you know, and I thought, I'm not just going to sit around and watch sad films, because I'm sad that my life hasn't worked out the way it has, but I'm not sad that I am where I am now, because, you know, so I would buy myself these little tins from Marks and Spencer's, and you know, like the, it's like a tin of pina colada,
or yes,
like, you know, I can't remember what they're called, but those little tins. And I had a tool belt, and I would call myself like Jane DIY, and I'd put the radio on, and I would put up shelves, and I did, and I'd have a swig from my tinny.
I love that. By the way, I think that it needs to be a whole YouTube series, because I honestly think that that is what women need. They need to see it and to be empowered, and they need the tool belt. You can sell that on the Shopify bit, but I think that's perfect. But how did you flip that mindset of like, how did you get to the stage where you were like, I'm going to go to agricultural college, I'm going to put those things up? Was that, do you think that was the help of the antidepressants? Do you think, did you go to therapy at that point? Like, what made you think, okay, I'm going to embrace this?
So I wasn't on antidepressants anymore by that point, which you don't need it. No, it was just in me. And what is interesting was I realize now, again, the hindsight, and I look back on myself so fondly, you know, with older eyes.
I'm looking back on you fondly with the with the tins.
And I realize actually what I've been doing now over the past sort of, it's been 12 years or so since then. And it's okay, kids, you can breathe out. It's a happy ending.
We need to get to the happy ending.
Is actually what I was doing was I was reconnecting back to me, and I'd lost me. I'd been in really, what's the word? Quite toxic relationships. And I had totally lost who I was. And it took a long time for me to sort of figure that out and try and piece that back together again. So for me, it was just like, right, asking myself questions. What do I like doing? Do that. That simple. What do I like doing? Do that. Go for a walk. Walk the dog. Do that. The agricultural college was, I've always been interested in, I love house makeovers. I've knocked down a whole house for one, rebuilt it. I just did that with my second husband, because weirdly, we were really good at that together. We just got married. And I've always loved DIY and building. So for me, the agricultural college was right. I've loved gardening, but I don't really know what I'm doing. I want to learn how to be a garden designer. And it was the funniest thing in the world, because I was doing new swimming at the time. And I would turn up on the day, because it was only one day a week, and then the rest was homework. I turned up, and there are all these kids. And then there was me sitting in this class.
And they're like, it's the woman from the telly.
And I'd go to the canteen, and then there'd be all these people doing double takes going, excuse me, my friends asked me to come and ask you, are you that lady off the telly? And I'm like, yeah, I am that lady. Yeah. Like, why are you here?
When are you here, lady?
I want to learn how to do garden design. So I did it. Sadly, I didn't end up finishing it for the funny. The reason is really funny why I didn't end up getting my qualification. I did end up, I was really good at it. And I actually totally redesigned my last garden. And it's really good. I'm really pleased with it. And I've helped other people with theirs. But the reason I didn't get my agricultural college garden design qualification was because I was in panto.
I think they should do that thing where they make you an honorary one and you just have to submit some of your work, surely. Then you're a doctor of design. Yeah, exactly. And all those people in the canteen will be like, we were there with her. She's cute. It's like you're a high school dropout. You had to leave to go do panto.
That's exactly it.
I love that. That's
exactly it. So yeah, I didn't actually get my qualification. When you going right back again to piecing myself together, that happened because after I'd been on my own for about a year, I was at a charity event and I was sat next to a gentleman and we got chatting. And anyway, he asked to meet me for coffee and I'd never dated because obviously I met my first husband at school. You know.
Same for me, first date, 45.
Yeah, 44 or something at that point. And so we met for coffee. And anyway, we ended up dating. And in a nutshell, and I now look back and I understand why I did it. It's familiarity. I did the same thing again.
Okay.
I got to the point where I had lost myself again. And one of my friends at work, funny enough, it was the makeup department at Loose Women. They all had a meeting about me. And they sat me down.
They staged an intervention.
They did. Yeah. And they sat me down one day, putting the powder on, and they went, we've been talking enough. Yeah. You were doing so well, and you're doing it again. You've lost yourself. You're a shadow of yourself. You are letting him walk all over you. And he's actually being mean. It's not just that, you need to leave now because we know what you're doing and you're going to end up right back in there again. So I did. I broke up with him.
Do you think, like, do you now reflect back and think on your behaviour? Do you think that you actually, you know, because you had this good girl mentality, you were sort of, you were making yourself small, and then naturally the power balance shifts and all that kind of stuff?
What I know now through the training that I've not just even, you know, I've had therapy since, and I've never had therapy. But also coaching, and I'm a coach now, and I now understand human behavior in a way that I never did before. What I realized, what I was doing was, we don't even know we do this. When you hear women saying, why am I always attracted to the same guy? It's because your brain is so powerful that it recognizes patterns in behavior, and it goes, oh, I know this, this is what we do. And so you find yourself attracted to a certain kind of person because that's what you've experienced in the past. Your brain doesn't go, oh, hang on a minute, no, better not do that. That never ends well. Your brain goes, yeah, we know this. This is good. So you almost need to, like, train new pathways in your brain that as soon as, rather than that pull, you think, no, hang on a minute. Yeah. So what happens was, when I broke up with this guy, and I thought, at least I didn't marry him, because he was only my third boyfriend. Literally.
Our sexual numbers are very low. I mean, my friends still laugh. I've got a friend who, she said to me, I started this sex column for You Magazine. She went, I've slept with more people on one holiday than you have in my... than you have in your entire lifetime. I was like, yeah. She was like, you're not qualified to do this.
That's so funny. My numbers are very, very low because I've married everyone. That's how low they are. That's how low they are.
Oh, God. I love that. I'm giving myself the hot sweats there. That's so funny. Right. Or you could just get a T-shirt.
But it actually leads on quite nicely to obviously meeting number three, who is Nick. And I'd broken up with this man that I've been seeing, and the same person at work said, right, I want you to come on a double date with me. Yeah. I was like, she said, so my husband has this friend, and he's going through a divorce right now, and I don't know him hugely well, but he seems really nice, and he seems lots and lots of fun. So even if it doesn't work out, come and have a laugh.
Yeah.
So I was a bit like, oh, just even the effort. Okay.
Even just the depilation, just the shaving. That's just too much.
Okay. So here are the logistics that come with having two children with two separate husbands who don't live in the same place. Okay. So that day, just to go on this date, I had to drop one child into London, come back to Surrey, drive another child all the way up to Hertfordshire, come back, take the dog to the kennels, and then drive to Brighton.
Oh my God!
When people say, oh, I know it's a bit of effort, you have no idea. I mean, I'd literally done 4,000 miles by the time I even got to Brighton. And I got to Brighton and I checked into a hotel because I thought, I'm going to be too tired to even think about driving home, and I've had a few drinks, so I'll check in.
You know, you've got to stay somewhere after the wedding, right? You know, you've got to have your honeymoon suite at that point.
So I checked in. I was like, okay, right. I'm in Brighton. Brighton's lovely. You know, by then it's dark. You know, it was November time. And I thought, okay, I'll keep myself busy. I'll go and get my friend a little present just to say, thank you for doing this, because it's really kind of you. It's really nice. So I went and I went down the lanes, bought a little present. So we met at her house for a drink, and then we went to Hotel Divan in Brighton. Okay. And we met at the bar there. I didn't have my contact lenses in because they just get on my nerves. I only really wore them for work because it was about an hour at a time. So I'm fine. Like, now I can see you. But in the distance, I was like, I have no idea what he looks like. So this man walks in with my friend's husband. I couldn't even look at him for the first hour. It felt so weird. Just the whole thing just felt like, oh. All I remember was he smelled nice. Sound like a blind woman, don't I? No, I don't. He smelled nice. he smelled nice and he whispered in my ear as we sort of did that mwah, mwah thing, I'm really nervous. And I thought,
Oh, that's nice.
So we kind of chatted. He didn't know who I was. Yeah. All he knew was I was his friend's wife's friend.
Yeah.
That's it. And that we worked together. We didn't know anything else. We came out of Hotel Divan. It's Saturday night in Brighton. We turned a corner and bumped slap bang into a hen do, because that's what happens in Brighton. And they all screamed and went, oh my God, we're swimming like this. And I'm thinking, well, I mean, to be honest, I didn't really care because I thought, I don't even know this man. And if it doesn't work out, I'm just going to go to bed. I'm tired, all that driving. And I was like, So they thrust their phones at him and made him take pictures of us. And he was like, what's going on? What is this thing? So he was like, okay, ladies. So he took these pictures and then we carried on walking and he went, what do you do? Well, actually, I work on Loose Women. And he said, yeah, but what do you do on it? I said, I actually host it. And he stood back and he was like this. You're the dark one who sits on the end. I went, yeah, that's me. I was like, oh God, here we go. So I did the only sensible thing, Rosie. I got absolutely shit-faced.
But you didn't marry him that night. That's good. That's good.
But you know what I did do? What? I got absolutely hammered. I told him everything. I told him all the nitty gritty, all the things you're not supposed to do on a date. I didn't know that. I've never dated. I've never, you know, read the manual. I sat there in this Japanese restaurant. And I'm like this, well, you might as well know everything because you can just Google me and it will just be a load of old shit. So I might as well just tell you the truth. Here's the truth. This is where I am. If you like it, great. If you don't, too bad. And he was sitting there nursing his drink thinking, wow, okay. Anyway, we then went disco dancing in Brighton. We found somewhere age appropriate. So there was some slightly older people, sort of in their 40s. But then the drink had worn off a little bit. And he started dancing with you know, our friends and stuff. Then he called up. There was this group of, I think they were Chinese ladies or Thai ladies, sitting really quietly. And he was like, come on, ladies. And he got them all up dancing. And he was so much fun and such a nice guy. I actually kind of stepped back and was like, actually, you are nice. You're a good chap. Nothing had happened. Then we were walking through this other bit of the dance floor of this place. I don't even know where we were. And he reached out to hold my hand to, you know, because it was crowded. Mm. Brace yourself. This now is the stuff of woo-woo nonsense. He reached out to take my hand and I took his hand and it was like this energy connected us as if we'd known each other before.
Okay.
And we both went like this and looked at each other as if we were seeing each other for the first time. The whole room just melted away and he kissed me. And we came up for air about 45 minutes later.
I think your mate was like, well, that worked out.
They got up, they were sitting down in another part of the club. And we went back to them and they were just laughing at us. And they were like
teenagers, basically.
So then we were both kind of laughing and a bit kind of, what just happened? It was the weirdest thing. And then I said to him, I think I'd like to leave. And he went, oh, okay, right. So, and our friends went, yeah, I think we're all going to leave now. So we got to the door and, you know, and he started saying, well, it's been really nice to meet you. And I said, no, I'd like to leave with you. And he went, oh, okay.
Excellent.
I went back to his flat. And can I just say, I did not go to sleep. It was fabulous. I've never done that in my whole life. And it was exactly what I needed. So anyway.
And I think, again, good girl, we're taught, you know, that's what I write about all the time. You know, we're taught all these things, you know, you have to wait till X date or you have to do this or you have to do that. If it feels right and you can own it, then it's brilliant.
It was so good. What was so funny was, I mean, clearly we've been together ever since and we're married. But
of course, clearly.
So funny was, not only have I I have never done anything like this in my whole life. You know, I've either met people at school and married them or, you know, da da da. So anyway, I'm quite shy. So Nick says he can remember me saying, he said, I just was like, woo, like this. He said, I don't remember this. He said, I said to him, look at me. I'm just walking around with nothing on in front of you. I don't even care. And he was going, okay. Right. Now he's like, yeah, so what a big deal that was. You know, the lights were on. That's a big deal. And then basically he won't mind me saying that. He'll be a bit embarrassed, but he won't mind me saying this. And I know you're going to be speaking to him, so you can.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to be getting the whole, yeah.
It's all good. It's all good. He, when he took his shirt off, I literally was like, oh, I need to tell my friends about this.
Did you take his little surreptitious picture?
No, I'm not modern enough. Think about that. He looked like Magic Mike. He really worked out, and I didn't know that. I didn't expect that. Yeah. And he's super fit, you know.
You just don't know what you're getting under the t-shirt, right? Don't know what those. Yeah.
He took his top off, and he had an 8-pack and all these muscles, and I was like, oh. And literally, the next day, I went home. I didn't go home. I went back to the hotel, and then because kind of afterwards, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I thought, I think I want to go home now. So I just left. And he made sure I got back to the hotel all right then. And to me,
he must have been thinking, what has happened to my life? I mean, presumably, was he in the throes of divorce at the time as well? So he's like, this is like weird for him, presumably.
Yes. 100%. 100%. Yeah. And I texted my girlfriends and stuff when I got home. The first line was, because they knew I was going on this date.
Yeah.
How did it go? And it was, I shagged Magic Mike. God knows what they think. I think they thought I'd jumped on stage in Brighton at some sort of show. But no, it was Nick. And he was in my phone for ages as Mr. Brighton.
Yeah.
And that was...
Oh, that's so funny. I did that with that. Yeah. It's funny, isn't it?
So basically... Nick and I, it should have just been this crazy experience that, you know, what a lot of fun. And also having done something I've never done before. And, you know, there we are. I'm a strong woman and all those sorts of things. And I actually would have been okay with that. That would have been all right. But what happened was we'd swap numbers and we started texting each other, and he was going away on business. He was going to America for a little while. And he was like, well, I'll reach out when I get back. I was like, okay. Yeah. And I was like, he lives in Brighton. I don't even, it's like an hour's drive away. It's not like it's close. And then what would happen is we started just meeting up just once a week. And the Magic Mike-ness continued. That was great. Yeah. That was really well done.
I think I might insist that he does his interview with his top off. I don't mind that.
Yeah. Not at all. For journalistic integrity, I insist.
Exactly.
But, and again, he will probably touch on this, but we should never have worked. We should never have got together, because I was sort of done. I thought, do you know what? I'm a good mum, and I'm just going to be a mum raising my kids, and I'll find things that make me happy. I will find my tribe, and that's okay. And he was depressed. He was going through a divorce. We were in such a similar situation. I was 2 years down the line to him, but we were in a similar situation. But what happened was, we became such good friends. Yes, you know, joking aside, all the chemistry and all that sort of stuff. And he was such a good man who was so broken and so determined to be a better person.
Oh,
because he was taking responsibility for his part in his marriage ending. And I just really wanted to be there for him. So I lifted him for the first 2 years or so. He was in therapy for most of that. And he got down to a very, very dark place. But I really understood it. And I understood what he was feeling and what he was going through. And he'll tell you this, but he lost everything. He literally lost everything. And when he eventually, I mean, I didn't meet his children for 18 months. He didn't meet mine for maybe 8 months, something like that. And even then it was as a friend and he'd come up and have Sunday lunch and this sort of thing. We took it really, really slowly. But when he eventually moved in with me, he moved in this clapped out old car with a Christmas tree, a suitcase and some golf trophies. That was all he had to his name. That was literally all he had to his name. And I kind of just took him in.
Yeah.
And we, you know, people now, obviously I've had a breakdown since then. I had a breakdown in 2019 because I went on SAS Who Does Wins and it opened up this whole box of bats that all flew out. And really what that was everything that I'd been through in my life, in my previous relationships that I had just not addressed. And Nick, he caught me when I fell. And what people don't realize is the reason I almost subliminally knew that it was a trust fall that I knew I could make. And I think that's why I breathed out and let it happen.
Yeah.
Was because I'd been there for him. And by this time we were married and, you know, we'd been through a fair amount. So really our relationship is the polar opposite of anything that I ever experienced, other than there is something about me that I really want to help people. So in all my relationships that I've had, I've seen a vulnerability and something that is not quite working. And I felt so compassionate about that I've just wanted to help. Only this time round, I'm so blessed that actually it's with someone who also works on himself as much as, you know, I work on myself, he works on his self, and then we work on ourselves together in that I had to have therapy after I came off SS Who Does Wins and, well, I didn't break down until about 10 months later, but it was because of that. And then we had couples counseling together. And the difference with going to couples counseling when you're doing it from a position of strength, when your relationship is good, but you want to find ways that if something like this ever happens again, that one of you is falling and you haven't said anything to the other one because you don't want to burden them or what have you, which was my case, that you need to know what little signposts there are so you can pick up on them. Mm-hmm. And also, as a couple, you need to understand that you may think you're being helpful, but actually you could be totally triggering the other person and not even realizing it. And what's so good is that we both 100% understood that. So we had counseling from a position of strength to help us make an even better relationship.
Yeah. And I mean, I totally think that is so right.
You know, people, I remember at the time, when I remember I mentioned on Lusamin once in passing that Nick and I had been to a counsellor and we spoke about it on the programme and I said what I said to you, that it's a position of strength and we were working things out, this sort of thing. And the weekly magazines jumped on it and the headline was Andrea Third Marriage Crisis. Andrea, yet another failure. Andrea, all of this stuff. And it was so negative and it was so awful. And I was furious. Not because of me. I don't care what they write about me. But I was furious because I thought there will be couples out there who are at breaking point, who what they really, really need is to go to someone who this is what they're trained in. This is what they know how to do. You've got to a point where you can't communicate anymore. You don't know how to put your point across. So you've shut down or you're just arguing or whatever. And you will see this woman who's put her hand up and said, actually, I've had counseling, and you're slagging her off. All these poor people will do is retreat back into their shell and think, I can't ask for help because people will either have a go at me, think I'm weak, think I'm doing something wrong. And it's bullshit.
It's the exact opposite, isn't it? It's about strength, and it's about saying, okay, I'm going to face up, I'm going to confront this. And it's really scary sometimes to say things within a relationship that you feel very vulnerable about.
But can you, you know, think about it this way. Is it a good idea to take two human beings and put them in a cage, leave them there for the rest of their life, and then expect them to get on? Never give them any instruction on to what to do if things happen. Just say, well, you're just not working hard enough. Well, marriage is a journey, and you just... I mean, what a load of old nonsense. Of course, if your plumbing broke, you'd go to a plumber. If your relationship is breaking, go to someone who's trained in that.
Isn't that the irony that we spend all our time doing things like getting the next house, getting the kids to the right school, you know, doing all this and, you know, working on our physical fitness, working on that, and we don't put it into our relationship. We just don't actually even sit down and talk about it and say, this makes me unhappy or this makes me really happy. And so I agree. I think, you know, marriage counselling or couples counselling when you're in a happy place is so vital.
Well, we now call it coaching because obviously, like I say, we're trained as coaches now, and I have a coach anyway, and it's such a great investment in yourself. I have a coach that I speak to every fortnight, and it's, you know, people might think, what is that? What does that even mean? And it's just talking through, like, where are you right now? And, you know, what are some things that you'd like to work on? Whether is it work? Is it career? Is it whatever it is? And we'll talk through like little game plans and this sort of thing. And what Nick and I realized when I quit Lusamin was that we needed to give we call her our relationship coach, but really she's the counselor that saw me when I had my breakdown, and is to give her a call because our dynamics have changed. Suddenly I'm not going out to work anymore. I'm working from home. I'm now sitting in our shared office at a desk next to you, and my whole identity has changed. Who am I if I'm not this person that is on the TV? Now suddenly, are you like my boss? You're not my boss. This is a joint vision that we're working on. And okay, I know you've done more of the day-to-day running of it while I've been doing sort of other things, but don't ask me about. But we took preemptive action, and we rang this lady and said, look, I know we can't come and see you because clearly we're in lockdown, but can we do this over Zoom? And we just sat down with her and went, right, okay, this is where we're at right now. What are sort of strategies do you advise? She was just brilliant because, first of all, you have an outside source who the first thing she said to us was, can I just applaud you for the fact that you're having the foresight to even ring me to have this conversation? Rather, you're not waiting until it gets to a point where you're both going, ah, you know, you're having... So give yourself a... high five or whatever for doing that. And then we just broke everything down into bite-sized chunks so that, okay, when this happens, step away. When this happens, find a way to work around all this sort of things. And we carried on with that. I mean, we haven't spoken to her for, I don't know, 10 months or something now, just because nothing's come up that we need to. But that's what we do, is we reach out before. And that's what I would urge all couples to do. Reach out before you need it. If you know you're coming up to a juncture, for example, and I'm not even talking about getting divorced, maybe your kids are leaving home and you're about to be an empty nester. As women, that can be, it can be a really empowering thing. Sometimes, you know, you suddenly have all this time and you have moments to find yourself. But it also could be a really hard grieving process, because who am I if I'm not a mother? I've given my whole life over to doing this thing. Reach out and have see it as coaching. Don't see it as counseling, if that helps you mentally with it. And both of you go together, because it's really important that both of you understand how the other is feeling. So you don't just go, for God's sake, put yourself together. You were moaning at how messy their room is and now it's clean. So what's the big deal? And you really hear each other with someone else in the room. And we all know, when there's someone else in the room, you're a lot more polite. So you do are. It just for that.
You're so right. And actually, you think relationships are about sort of like hot sex and thinking someone's Tom Cruise or Mel Gibson or all that sort of stuff. So much of it is about your compatibility, isn't it? And so tell me, because you briefly touched on it, that, you know, this girl is on fire. That's come from your coaching.
So this girl's on fire actually started about 4 years ago, and it started as an online blog.
Yeah,
started purely because going back to answering people's DMs and realizing this is not sustainable. I can't keep doing
at 4 in the morning. Yeah.
I know. And I can't keep doing this. So, you know, and I'd written a couple of books and this sort of thing. And I thought, right, how can I keep putting really useful information out there? So I asked Nick to set up a website for me. Mm-hmm. So he went on Squarespace and he set up a website. And we called it This Girl Is On Fire. I can remember us sitting there brainstorming, like, well, we need a name for this. And I was like, right, I want something that shows, you know, women are great. They can be really great, but also I'm of a certain age. So I get a bit hot sometimes. So I think it was
I didn't think of that. That's brilliant. That's so funny.
They were like, what about This Girl's On Fire? And I'm like, I like it. That's really good. So that was how it was like a jokey name that we came up with. And it started as a online blog, and then so I was writing because my background is print journalism and writing. I had friends, I asked them to come on board, and then basically different journalists were picking up on it and contacting me and saying, I love what you're doing. Can I write for you? And what happened was, because I've been in their shoes, I don't think you should just take things for free and put it out there, unless they volunteer it for free because they're promoting something, that's all fine and good. But someone's put work into something, their work needs to be paid for. So I was paying everyone absolutely their due fees. It organically ended up being seen by about 80 countries around the world. Women were just sort of coming across this space. So it was getting bigger and bigger. And we were ending up, I was needing to get more people on board to help. While it was free to the whole world, it wasn't free to run. Okay. And I had a terrible business mindset, which was, I don't want adverts and I don't want sponsorship because I don't want it to be one of those really irritating websites where things are popping up all over the place and you go, do you know what? I don't even care how good this is. I can't be bothered to read it. So what it meant was I was working myself into the ground trying to...
And paying people. To host it and yeah, all of that.
It was costing money. So then I thought, right, this needs to stop. This is around about the time of having a breakdown. It's like, right, I burnt out here as well. This needs to stop. So we decided to make it a community. And the reason for that was I realized that it's all very well putting information out there. And you'll know this because you have people message you and you communicate and you take their questions and you put it back out. If people are really interested in changing something about their life, whether that's through personal growth or looking at their mindset or even, you know, thinking about my relationship or whatever it might be, reading a book is not going to change anything for you. You read it, you think, oh, okay, I'll do those things. And then within a month, you've sort of forgotten and you don't do it anymore. What really helps is being part of a community where you encourage each other and you're all wanting the same thing, but you're all at different levels of where you are with that experience. And so I wanted to put a community together. So that was how This Girl's On Fire in its current format came. And then what I wanted to do was, Nick and I then trained. The reason I trained to be a coach, he was already coaching people in business and this sort of thing. But I wanted to train because of the good girl tendencies, because I thought, I need to trust myself that the information I'm giving people is right.
Well, it's so important, isn't it? I find that with the heartbreak stuff. It's like, it's not just saying, well, you need to wear vertical stripes if you're, you know, if you want to create your hips. This is like people's whole life, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, there's a responsibility that comes with raising people up.
Yeah.
Because we're not all at the same place and my intentions may be honorable and may be good, but if I'm not doing the right thing, I couldn't live with myself. So that was why I wanted to train. I'd always been interested in this anyway, for probably since I did psychology as part of my degree in my 20s. So human behavior and mindset and why we do the things we do has always been of interest to me. And then why I decided to put it in an app was because I thought, we already have habits, that things that we do every single day that we don't even think about. How can I take a habit that we have and make it useful? So put it this way, you're standing in Starbucks and you're waiting for the coffee. What's the first thing you do is you reach in your back pocket and you pull your phone out and you start scrolling. And we all do it. You know, you can't even sit and drink your coffee without putting your phone down and you're just mindlessly scrolling. And I thought, how can I take this habit that we have and make it something that is actually really powerful and really useful? So I put This Girl's On Fire into an app so that, yes, you pay to join the community. And what that means is you're in a safe space surrounded by women who are all wanting to feel the same way as you. There's no adverts, there's no pop-ups, you're not going to be sold anything. Once you're in, you're in. And also, you know, people say to me as well, how can you charge people? How can you charge people to come and do what you do when there's all this free stuff on the internet? That's the whole point. It's because there's so much stuff on the internet, you don't know what you can trust. Oh, you get overwhelmed and think, I don't even know where to start, so you don't do anything. I've got my reputation to think of. Everyone knows who I am. This is my business. I sold my house to fund this business. We are all in. We totally believe in it. There's no investors. There's no city slicker has come to us with a thinking, you know, this is a great idea. Can you just put your face on it? No, this has come from my heart and my soul.
Yeah. And how amazing that you, I just think it's so inspirational, your whole journey, and just being that person who would dim their lights and shut down and then feel, you know, feel sadness and shame about all those things, to feeling brilliant about the life that you've had and where you're going. You're amazing.
Well, that's very nice of you. I'm just a normal person who's been through normal stuff. And now I just want to help people so that when they're there, I can go, do this. This will be
yeah. Oh my God, thank you so much. I feel like you've given me so much time, so I'm really grateful.
I'm just sorry. I talk a lot.
No, I love it. It is brilliant. I feel like actually I'm just going to turn this into the whole podcast series. There'll be like 7 of them. It'll be brilliant. But thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I've loved it.
You have been listening to Life's Rosie, a Viral Tribe production. I'd be so grateful if you could like and subscribe wherever you currently listen to your podcasts. To find out more about what Viral Tribe are up to, go to tribe.fm. That's tribe with 2 eyes.fm. Sign up and join the podcast revolution. Thanks for listening.